My guest today is Ron Yuan. Ron has acted in no less than 4 films every year since 1988. That's freaking awesome. He is an actor, a stuntman, a director, writer, producer. He has done everything you can in front and behind a camera, including set design, editing, you name it. He is a renaissance man when it comes to film. He might not be a household name, but he is a testament, not just for an Asian man trying to break into the film industry, but anybody wanting to learn about the nuts and bolts of breaking into film. What I love about Ron the most is he's a craftsman who cares about the process, the craft. I say this as the ultimate compliment. He has the lunchbox mentality. He is a dear old friend. Here is Ron Yuan. All right, Ron Yuan, so glad to have you. Right off the bat, got to give you a compliment. Since 1991, several speaking parts, you got your several gigs a year. Every single year since 1991. What's up with that? How do you do that?
I think it's actually earlier. I think it's 80, like 89 or something, 90. But yeah, it's something like that. It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah, from like independent, probably stuff before that.
Yeah.
But then this is just what IMDb.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
It's, you know. And I'm like looking at that. Oh, my God. That's, I mean, Michael Caine and Kevin Bacon have nothing on you. I mean, you're a busy guy.
Yeah, knock on wood. I can hit everyone probably within 2 or 3 degrees of separation instead of the 6 with Will Smith. Yeah.
I'm not even talking about the directing, producing, cinematography. You even did some set design in there. It was like, you got the full spectrum, you know? So that's very impressive. All right. So the first question, you know, I'd like to do, kind of like to build the story about you, you know, is to ask you, what was your first want? Doesn't have to be for what the business or anything, but what was your first want that you could remember that stuck with you for a long time?
Wow. I think in terms of like the business and acting and the passion for acting, I've been like doing theater since 2nd grade. You know, it started on a dare of a friend. They were doing these Christmas plays and stuff. So my first play was Scrooge. So
you were Scrooge?
I was like, what's the one that looks like death and without dialogue, but it's always pointing the finger like with the hood?
My ex-girlfriend. No, I don't know. You're talking to a Jewish guy. How am I supposed to know?
Exactly. It's, I don't know. It's either the Ghost of Christmas Future or Ghost of Christmas Past. It's the one that's always pointing the scary finger, you know, with the hood on. You can't see it.
And that was your first role?
Yeah, that was my first role. So here I'm going, just all I did was this. but you know, as I went to rehearsals and stuff, you know, I was just like watching everyone. I'm like, oh wow, this is great play, cool performances, and I'm like, I want to do that next. I can do that. You know, I think I could do that. So kept working on that. And I think growing up, my mom used to take me to like these drive-ins, man, when I was like 3 or 4. I don't know if you experienced this, but it was always like a double feature of Clint Eastwood, like The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, or some film like that. And then a Bruce Lee feature. So,
well, that would be the Van Nuys drive-in.
Yeah. So, I was in New York at the time. So.
Oh, no kidding.
Because I came out, I'm originally from New York. So I came out from New York, probably to LA, probably in 88, around there.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So,
okay.
So I was doing a lot of theater in New York, but yeah. So I think my first one, going back to your question, I was just like, and also some of those drive-ins, double features, there was also Sidney Poitier film, like Who's Coming to Dinner, To Sir with Love. So it was a combination of like, this is so cool. Like, I want to do films like this, you know, either be in a Western like Clint, be Sidney Poitier, Who's Coming to Dinner, or be Bruce. And of course, Bruce stood out more because it was a Asian face like myself that I'd never seen. And the fact that like all my friends or my friend's parents, like all of a sudden started hearing about him. It's just like, I was like, wow, you know, I really want to not necessarily like be a martial artist, but I want to act and be able to interpret someone else's writing and, you know, have people. It's that chemistry between a performer and audience in live theater is incredible. I mean, it is like everything that they say. It's better than food, sex. I mean, you can't really describe the feeling, but once you feel like you've committed to a certain choice and you feel that the audience takes it in and there's that relationship that can never be repeated again. And it's just.
Is that dopamine?
What was that?
It's like dopamine.
Yeah.
It hits you.
Exactly.
That reciprocal bandaloop of like joy and love you and you love that, you know? Yeah. And yeah. So what would you say would be the first when you really started going for that? What was your roadblock? What did you really, you know, what was really stopping you? If you had like a need, like what need Would you really honestly say, look, this is my problem. I got to try to figure this out because this is what's stopping me from getting it.
I mean, we can, you know, go into like, you know, and I'm sure you've heard it before, like, yeah, you know, just Asian parts weren't, Asian actors just weren't used that much back then. But I want to go before that. I think it has to do with my own family's insecurities and my own insecurities. You know, it's just like my grandfather saying, you know, why would you become an actor? Like, people don't want to see you. They don't give a fuck about you. Basically saying that in Chinese. And I'm just going, yeah, well, that's not what it all, you know, I'm like trying to go and I had no words for these. It's just this, it was this kind of thing to even to my parents, they just, my family just wanted me like to work for their restaurants and take over whatever, blah, 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 blah.
At the restaurants time. In New York yeah. at that time when you're growing up?
What was that?
Restaurants in New York?
Yeah, yeah. It was. They had some great restaurants. It's Hunan Sichuan Food. So it was called Hunan's Hunan on 1st Avenue, 73rd Street.
Could only imagine.
So, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, I used to take them down to the restaurant and stuff. But yeah, you know, and I helped, you know, both my brother and I bust our ass in the restaurant business to help the family. But I think when it came to our own careers, they were just hoping like, you know, my grandfather was pushing for like, I don't know, either an architect or politics, you know, which is so not my brother and I. So it's like, you know, and then, you know, if we weren't going to be the doctors and lawyers and stuff, then might as well just take over the restaurants. They didn't gel with this acting thing. And they truly didn't accept it until I booked a Hong Kong film. And here I am doing a film with Andy Lau and some Hong Kong stars. And all of a sudden, oh, wait, my son's an actor, you know, but it didn't matter that all the American shows I did before and whatever films. And I think my first feature was Jade with Linda Fiorentino, Michael Biehn, and Dave Caruso, right? Is that his name? From
Yeah, Jade. So that would probably be the big entrance, that film, right?
Yeah.
Where you really kind of said, okay, we're making traction here.
Yeah, it was my first feature. I did a couple of TV guest stars before that. And, you know, people will tell you, like, back in the 80s and 90s, like, it was rough. I mean, for, like, when I first came in, the only Asian parts were, like, either Computer Math Geek or Takeout Boy or your triad or Yakuza member. So if you had to choose, what would you have chosen? So for me, yeah. I passed on the geek parts and I, you know, because I felt like if it was a position of power, if you're a baddie or the right-hand baddie, you could still bring something to the character, you know, so that even if it's in this shitty ass B film, you know, that we're watching and stuff. So I always thought like, okay, if I could just get a moment from this character that could look like it was part of like a cool indie. Just that moment. They don't have to know what the movie's from. Then I could put it on my reel. And if I could just grab certain moments from the other crappy films that I did, because that was the only thing that was out back then. A lot of actors like my age range will tell you that. And it's like, then it created a reel where I could go out for network shows or a bigger film project.
Okay. So you start getting in there. Your career starts taking off. What year was this? Would you really say you're like, hey, I'm really cooking here. This is starting to happen.
That was like late 80s, early 90s. But in 87, 88, I got my SAG card from a mentor, God bless his soul, who's passed away, named Jimmy Nickerson. And Jimmy was responsible for doing all the action and helping out Scorsese with Raging Bull. So, and he also did the first two Rockies. So Jimmy taught me the ins and outs of how he shot boxing fights and different fights and his, you know, world of choreography. So I learned a lot from him and he actually wanted me to do more stunts with him. And actually both my brother and I, my brother's really talented and I just wanted to focus on acting. So back then, so we were introduced to stunts, but then later when the acting stuff was so slow, I started taking Jimmy up like, okay, what kind of job you got me? So he got both at different times, my brother and I, like choreography jobs for different shows just to pay the bills and stuff, you know? So, and then later on when I did acting stuff, there were stunt coordinators that I bonded with and they knew that I had extra physicality with just doing good fight stuff and designing that kind of stuff. So Merritt Yanka, who also, God bless his soul, recently passed away, he also gave me a couple of breaks and just always looked out for me. Like he's always calling me up going, so how's the acting going? I'm just like, dude, it's so slow. Okay, come up to me. Work for me in Last Bridges. You know, I will hide you. You know, just choreograph something. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I'm down. So for me, all that, the behind the scenes action, the stunt experience also helped me become a better actor because with that, you have to deal with blocking and, you know, more of the geography of the scene between actors, between, you know, so that when I like acting stuff, and I think also, I mean, stage too, probably the most, But for me, it's just, it just makes you very comfortable in your setting right away. You kind of got to go to, okay, like boom, boom, boom. You got to like just sink into like, okay, you've been in this place. You might've just seen this thing for the first time as an actor, but in this movie or in this TV show, you've lived here for 10 years. So it's got to be that comfortable. So there's things that you got to make sure that a guy that's lived here for 10 years, how he would act to a guy that just met the set for the first time. You can't act like the guy that you just saw the set for the first time. It's things like that.
Yeah. I remember that one conversations I would have with you, you would always be very serious about the craft. You would always talk, you'd say, have you seen this movie or that movie? And you were always serious about independent films, you know, art films, the craft, the whole thing, you know, and I could see it, you know, this industry is, it's hard for anybody that has gifts, you know, to get into it. Mm-hmm. And then even though if there's an obstacle in your way, which, you know, they always try to pigeonhole or typecast you in Asian, you know, so there's an obstacle there, but you were just fighting that. You said, look, you know, I could just see it in your personality. You're like, you know, this is like something that I'm really serious about and the craft of it. You know, wouldn't you say that a lot of people say, try to pigeonhole you. It's like, no, you're a stunt actor. Or you know, like, you don't understand.
Yeah, I got player hated on both sides. Like the action side would be like, oh yeah, dude, he's an actor. Can't really blah, blah, blah. The acting side's like, oh dude, you know, you don't want, he just got that part because, you know, he knows all stunt people. Like, I'm like, motherfucker, I auditioned just like you, bitch. You know, so it's like, you know.
Yeah. Well, you don't get the role unless you deserve the role.
Yes, yes.
It's like being a comedian. You don't get laughs unless it's a laugh point.
Right. Right, exactly. But I, you know, I pissed a lot of people off. I got to say, you know, there's things that I did that wasn't the right way for like young actors coming up. Like, so I'm coming from New York, you know, I understudied for years and years and years. But for me, like, I was always like, it's never good enough. It's that attitude, right, that you put on yourself. So for me, it's like, when I got with new agents, I would just be like, yo, what about this part? Blah, 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 blah. You got to get me in the fucking room. Da, da, da. I'm perfect for this, man. Like, this is New Yorker, blah, blah, blah. My agent would go, yes, Ron, but he's Caucasian. Yeah, don't fucking say that to me. That's your job. You get me in the fucking room. You deal with that. Yeah. And I'm going to change their fucking mind. So it's like, it was that kind of thing where agents are like, is this motherfucker crazy? You know, like, you know, and I would be calling them because I'd be like demanding like, yo, you know, why aren't we being seen as much as this? And I was waking up to the whole industry. And for me, it's just like later on, I tell actors, don't be calling your agents all the time. Email them, fax them at the time when we had faxes, that kind of thing. So by you calling them, you're kind of inhibiting them from doing their work and you're just going to be a nuisance to them. So, but I had this fucking ego like, yo, just get me in the fucking room. I'll tear it up. So I had to calm that down.
Really? Would you say that? Cause that's a component that you need. I mean, would you say that was something that was holding you back sometimes?
I wouldn't change it, but yes, it probably did with my representation initially, but I learned quickly. But I think it's also that drive that pushes me to excel at everything that I can't, I got to be better. It's part of that same thing. And I definitely would not want to lose that. So.
Yeah. And what was some of, when you're just starting to roll there, what would you say when you look back on and say, yeah, that's what I was really sinking my teeth into. And that was a technique that was really helping me out. And I was getting results with that. What was that? Some of those things.
If we're talking about technique and not a certain project, then I would have to say, cause I read tons of books, took tons of class, did tons of theater, right? But there were two books that were intrinsic in how it kind of changed the game for me internally, personally. And one of them was The Writer's Journey by Christopher Vogler. Because I think not just writers, but every director, every actor should read this book because I feel like it really helps you. It was the first thing that made, like, you know, when we get sides and stuff, you're always, it's that question, am I making the right choice on this guy? Am I doing the right things to build this background, even though it's not on the page, but we have to make it up. And for me, I was always doubting myself and questioning myself and stuff. So when I read The Writer's Journey, it just changed the game for me. Like I got right into what the writer's motivation was. And I kind of knew for me from all my past experience, then I was like, I can pick on choices that will complement his writing that he didn't necessarily write, but he could be like, yo, this guy thought about the process. So if you can get to the point where because most writers are producers on TV, you know, and film. So for you can get them to think that you actually thought about what's deeper than what just the sides, you know, put out. So for me, the second book was Mindhunter. And unlike the series is great, I've you know, a very dear friend on it, but the book gets even into just deeper into the psyche of how to break down a crime scene. And what I found that was really, really incredible to me was the same way John Douglas, who used to teach at Quantico, it's all the FBI profilers, the same way he breaks down a scene is sometimes the approach we do as an actor to build a character. But this guy was amazing because he can go to a crime scene and within 20 minutes, he'll tell you, yeah, he's driving a 68 Ford. He walks with a limp. He might have blah, blah, blah. Could have been abused by this. And I'm just thinking, just by coming in 20 minutes, just looking about how this guy lived, it was amazing. So for me, it's very disturbing because it gets into the psyche of serial killers and stuff. So eventually, like, I would be giving it out as Christmas gifts to friends, but it was always my friends that are, you know, female. And they're like, call me back. Because one just went back to college for a psych major and stuff. And she did great. And she goes to Jamaica and she calls back. She calls me like, Ron, I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, how was it? How was vacation? Da, da, da. She's just like, fuck you. I was like, what? What? She goes, your book, fucking Mindhunter, fuck you. I was like, you didn't like it? No, I loved it. But I couldn't enjoy my graduation to Jamaica because I was like, every second I was looking at a guy going, does he want to do something to me? Where does he want to? So I'm like, you know, but I feel like I think all women should read this because it's almost like also 97% or whatever the number is, very high, of all serial victims are female. And it's like, you don't realize you could be in a packed parking lot and still be in very much danger if you're not aware of your social surroundings, you know, so gas stations, all that stuff. So for, it's almost like building that New York sixth sense. Like you're from New York, you already got it. You know, it's like growing up, you already been through the shit. But for mostly other people, yeah, you can't trust it. So you always got to have that second guard. You always got to be like, hey, I got my mace in my purse. I got this and this, whatever plan, all that stuff. So it just prepares you. But bringing it back to acting, it was incredible. It's the building blocks of what we do for character work. And that's why, Mike, you know, like, too, when you used to, like, you know, guys that actually took this process seriously, you know, guys like, I just want to make some money, man, get some girls, you know, so they don't put any work into the art. So it becomes very surfaced acting. So you got to dig, you know, layers deep.
So you're starting to roll. Yeah. Okay. What were some of the crazy things that you said, oh man, I did not expect this. This is fucking nuts.
Certain actors' egos. I'm not going to say names, but you know, it's like, all right, you've been on set before. You know, it's like if you, for their close-ups, I'm there for them, man. I'm like, hey, you know, you're always asking like, do you want me to throw it any way for you? You know, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh yeah, yeah. I'm like, you want me to get hotter? That way you could, but it's like, yeah, yeah, oh, that's a great idea. Boom, 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 did this. Thank you, man. Like, yeah, cool, man. But you're thinking, man, this is great. Great synergy, working together. Okay, turn around, my close-up.
Yes.
Bam. Gone.
Nothing.
Where'd she go? Where'd he go? Oh, shit. So the next thing, I'm reading to an ex on a fucking C-stand, okay? And the voice is coming from the script supervisor about 30 feet behind me. And I got to be in this intense emotional scene where this was sad. And it's just like, so that to me was like, you got to be in it, man. It's almost like, because if you're only certain, used to a certain type of coaching where there's a synergy with another actor, you know, then your performance will be compromised. But if you have different facets and where you could work and you could still be in the zone, even though I'm looking at that fucking C-stand with an X, right there, I'm thinking that's Meryl Streep or so-and-so. It's there. It's fucking there. I'm there. I'm in the zone. You can't fuck me. So I had to learn that real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've seen that. I've been there. Yeah. That's funny. So, all right. So you're going through those situations. Anything crazier that you've seen in your time? I know you got something else.
Yeah, I've seen fights. I've seen tons of stuff. I just can't speak on it.
Really? You saw a fight? Like a fight that's like martial art fight?
Like fights. Fights. Like
the people that didn't know how to fight.
Martial arts, everything. Just everything. Like people getting messed up. So, you know, also like on my film that I directed in China, it was my camera department got into a fight with props department. And it was huge. People, I mean, fucking, you saw like pans, metal coffee makers getting thrown, people getting hit, blood, stitches everywhere. Police came, like, you know, six people were arrested from my camera department. It was fucking nuts. It was crazy. But as far as from an acting side, yes, there's been tons of times where you had to break down arguments. People have egos. And then, yeah, some people just have, they go to fisticuffs. So that's happened quite a bit.
All right. So what would you say after you got rolling? What would be, there's always hills and valleys. Yeah. What would you say would be a low point that you hit where you're like, man, that was a low point. And it was like, I got through that, but it really sucked.
Yeah. There's been a lot of them, but
even after you hit success, you always hit that low point and then you got to fly out of it. It's just inevitable.
Most guys will tell you because of the lack of parts for Asians in the 80s and 90s, you know, unless it was the kind of thing that I told you about, it was hard most of the time. But yeah, but going, I'm going to be a little more particular to your question. Yeah, after I hit a couple strings where I'm working, doing stuff, I met with the head of Warner Bros. Casting for Lethal Weapon 4. And she couldn't make up her mind, so she had me read for up to almost 4 or 5 different parts, and I rocked them all, gave them different backgrounds. And she was, so Marion Doherty was her name. She was just going, she's a legend. Like, I just love what you did for each character. You know, just like, how did you, we didn't even really give you that much time. And I was just like, oh, I appreciate that, blah, blah, blah. Next thing I know, I'm in Richard Donner's house.
Oh, yeah.
And it's looking like, you know, down to the final wire, like me and another guy and all that stuff. So it felt really good, went great. We were at his fireplace, just talking and went through the stuff. Then afterwards, my manager's like, oh God, you know, Warner Brothers calling in Marion saying your career's going to change. I'm like, oh yeah, cool, cool. So next thing I know, a week goes by, nothing. 2 weeks, nothing. 3 weeks, I'm like, Dave, what the fuck? He's just like, okay, Marion just called. She spoke to one of the producers that someone else just came into the game. You were number one, but yeah, some Hong Kong guy named, you know, some guy from Asia named Jet Li. And I just went, wait, because I had already, you know, I'm into Asian cinema. So it's just like, I'm like, are you serious? Jet Li's like, yeah, why? Like, don't worry about this. You got this. Like, he probably can't even speak English. I'm just going, no, you don't understand, Dave. I know Jet Li. Like, I'm a fan of his. If I'm the producer, I would hire Jet Li business-wise over me. I'm a nobody. So it's like, he's like, no, don't fucking say that, da, da, da. Another week goes by. No, it's still, they're still trying to debate, you know, boom, boom. It goes to Jet. My heart's broken. And it's like, that was my first biggest, like, I couldn't leave my house for a while. So, yeah.
So how long did that take you to get over that? Because that's, you know, Dick Donner film, you know, Jet Li.
Yeah. And it's like, because for me, you know, Jet was known as the martial arts guy. I know, like, if I were fortunate enough to have his part, I definitely would have taken my career path towards more different acting gigs and then occasionally go back to action. But it was just the sadness that, like, damn, I almost had that chance to just be on a bigger platform to pursue your other goals of acting. Because, like, dude, I grew up on Woody Allen. You know what I'm saying? I grew up on different playwrights and stuff. So for me, but I'm not going to get that to direct. I'm not going to be a lead. I'm not going to be a lead in a rom-com. You know, maybe in the future, who knows, goes that way, that kind of thing. But
you've been rising a lot lately. You know, I wanted to talk to you about, what was it, Young Dragon? What was the... I'm messing up the name. What was the dragon? Mine's a blank. What were you? You play the heavy. You play a heavy in it. You have a great fight scene at the end of it.
Oh, Birth of the Dragon. Yeah.
Birth of the Dragon.
See that?
I mean, I really love that role that you had in there. And dare I say, were some of those roles in the fight scene at the end of the movie, was that a little bit of improv? It's not one of those chop suey films that, you know, where the bad guy gets, you know, shot.
Yeah. That was a little, that was a little.
Was it? Yeah. Did I get that right?
Yeah. I like, that's a good call. They had a line there, but I just played with it. George, the director, trusted me. He's a great guy. He wrote Adjustment Bureau, directed Adjustment Bureau. So he was the one through a mutual friend that called me, asked me to do this part, but I was working on Marco Polo at the time. So initially it conflicted, so we couldn't do it, but then they got pushed back. We got, and then it worked out. So, but yeah, it was fun. George is great. You know, the movie didn't, I think for the first trailer, it got some hate because they were trying to, the white character was kind of like a Steve McQueen character. So, you know, there was a lot of people that were bagging it because they're like, man, this is about Bruce and, you know, Wong Jack Man. Why are they going through the white guy again? So there was a lot of whitewashing, but I don't think they were understanding that's not what they were trying to do. They were trying to show, like, you know, the whole point of it, of them having to battle, was because Bruce was teaching non-Asian students. So that's a big to do. And I think with the backdrop of the 60s and the Black Panthers and that whole thing, it still, I don't think, has been done right. But I felt like that the film got a lot of crap, that it may be a little too much. Yeah.
I thought you had a nice juicy role there, though. I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that?
It was fun, you know, but again, to me, it's like, it's another baddie and stuff, but you know, in hindsight, like, knock on wood, you know, you don't want to get force in the mouth. But for me, it's like, I've done so many of those baddie parts. Like, I'll give you an example. Me and Donnie Yen were working on Mulan. And at first, he's just like, I'm like, well, he's asking me, how do you feel about it? I'm like, this is great, because it's kind of like what the Black Panther experience was. But it's like, for Asians, it's rare that you have a huge studio that backs a whole Asian film. you know, it has to take almost a Disney classic. And for me, you know, everyone was wonderful on that. But Donnie, I'm like, how do you feel about your character? It's just like, Ron, I did this. My daughter was said, it's Mulan. You got to do it. My wife is like, this is girl empowerment. You got to represent this. Like, this is, I'm like, yeah, no, I believe in that too. He's like, but I've played so many bad guy parts, Ron, that I'm just done with this. But I said, but there's a different, I mean, Donnie, this is Mulan, you know, it's like, it's going to be timeless and shit. So like for you, like when you asked me that, I'm like, yeah, no. And I appreciate it. But to me, I like the characters that could be just another layer deeper, another layer. Like maybe this bad guy was a good guy. Maybe the good guy is a bad guy. Maybe it's this. Maybe there is a fine balance that you have to decide whether you actually like this guy or not. Or am I doing my job if I make you as the audience kind of like me, even though I'm a bad guy, to the fact that you're going to be like, fuck, why am I finding myself drawn to this character? I shouldn't be. He's a fucking asshole. But then you know that's what we determine layers by. So.
Yeah, that's the ineffable element that you put behind it that a lot of people don't see sometimes. And that's why certain actors, you know, you just, I don't want to name any names, but you just end up hating them because inherently they're miserable, you know, and they're just not meant for that role. They should have had another role because they're not the sweetheart or whatever that role that was just forced because they were a bigger name.
We must have worked with the same guys.
What's that?
We must have worked with some of the same guys.
So another role that I'll bring up real quick was in the Doctor Strange role. That was really cool. And it was kind of like a baddie, but not a little.
And Doctor Strange,
not so much.
That's Benedict Wong, man. That's my bro. He's fucking awesome. I love him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So how'd you feel about that role?
For him, I thought it was great because I think Benny just kills it and everything. The first time I worked with Benny was on Marco Polo. So he played Kublai Khan and I actually was aged 20 years to play his uncle. So I think Benny is a fantastic, uber talented actor.
In Doctor Strange, that wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me.
In Doctor Strange?
No, that was my boy.
Are you kidding me? Do you have a doppelganger that I don't know about or something? Wait a second.
Bro, that's Benedict Wong, dude. That's the guy from Marvel.
No.
He's a dear friend of mine. He's a brilliant actor. Brilliant actor.
Did you steal his look or he stole yours? I'm like sitting there wondering, like, he look. I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, no, but we always wanted to work together. You know, we've talked about it. And because he's from the UK, the first time I saw him was on a film called Dirty Pretty Little Things many years ago with Audrey Tautou. And I thought, man, who is this guy? I thought he was great. And when we finally saw each other on Marco, we were like just telling old war stories. Yeah, but it's Dr. Strange. That's all Benedict.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to readjust my shit. So, oh, that's going to happen. So maybe not. So this is real. So, you know, we haven't talked a long time either. So, you know, I don't study your IMDb by heart. You got an amazing amount of like work that is like, I can't keep up with your like 4, 5, 6, 7, sometimes films a year, you know, that you're doing, but you're also directing. Are you going to direct the next Mulan or what's going on with that?
No. I'm going to be directing. It's kind of like a sequel to the 47 lore. So it's 47 Ronin. It's untitled. It's for Universal and Netflix. We're putting it in the future, kind of in a Blade Runner cyberpunk world. So there's going to be a new culture of samurai and ninja. It's going to be a lot of fun. But
what do you want to do next? What's the big goal for you right now that in the next, you know, 3 to 5?
I think it's having this fine balance of, you know, in an ideal world, doing something with acting for a little bit. And then on the off time, being able to direct a film and editing and then boom, back into the, in front of camera. If I could balance being in front and behind camera, because I love both, that would be the ideal situation. So like, yeah. So for like, you know, for this 47 thing, once I get done, I probably want to jump on to something to act, but then there could be another film coming up right after for directing.
What's the juicy role? What's the role that you want to do? Or somebody use that. Screw what you think somebody's going to let you do. What do you want to do?
Remember that question that we talked about Lethal Weapon 4? So there was another big, and it was much years later, but I think this is around 2010 to 2011. I booked a pilot with HBO with Alan Ball, who created 6 Feet Under. I mean, incredible writer, incredible showrunner.
American Beauty.
He won an Oscar for American Beauty, right? So at the time, his show True Blood was like the number one show in the world, right? So he was directing another pilot, and myself, Mahershala Ali and Ben Whishaw were some of the actors that were casted. I mean, all the actors were awesome. And that pilot was an amazing experience for me because for the first time, I felt like I was doing a part that didn't need to be Asian. He was kind of like Tony Soprano, but he owned a crime scene cleaning company. It was called All Signs of Death. Mahershala played my buddy, and that you find out later we actually were in war together. So we opened up this crime scene cleaning company, and it's like just the layers. Like, you know, I have two kids. One, my son's autistic. My other little girl is getting in trouble because all she does is curse because she basically mimics my wife and I arguing all the time, you know? So there's all this stuff. And then what happens is Ben Whishaw is a teacher. He saves my daughter in a shootout and another kid dies in his arms. So he goes to crap and he basically is just working odd jobs like a year later. So I get him to work for my company. And that's where he learns the ins and outs of cleaning. And, you know, what I didn't know was that cleaning companies, I thought, used to be government owned and stuff, but they're actually all private owned. And it's all street turf territory. It's almost like their own little mafias. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on between street crime scene cleaning companies, like really bad stuff. So just that whole underbelly of LA was a really exciting world to be in. And like, so yeah, so at the time when we were doing it, you know, HBO is calling peeps like, oh yeah, blah, 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 get Ben and Ron and Herschel ready for the Golden Globes and all that stuff. So, and we knew we were putting down great work. Like Alan Ball would like hug me and Ben every day and all that stuff. And it was the first time I just felt like, God, I'm actually using the chops that all these years of learning, training, and also life experience. And we were on the bubble for about 3 months. And finally they said, no, it's not going any further because everyone thought the show was going. So that was another heartbreak, but that's the kind of part that I would want because it's so fully realized. It's so layered, great character, great stuff. They're humanly flawed too, but their hearts are heroic. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of different stuff. So going back to your question, even though this is a heartbreak thing, but that's the kind of part I would love to do. It's, you know, characters of substance. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we had we got to that typical question, but you know, if you had like Ron now going back to little Ron, what would you tell him when he's getting starting out?
That's a great question. I would say something my mom said to me. Hey, I appreciate your work ethic, busting your butt, but sometimes just take a step back, enjoy life.
That's pretty damn good. So what's next? What's on your schedule?
Right now I'm currently doing voicing over three projects. Yeah, one is The Monkey King with Stephen Chow, did Kung Fu Hustle, Shaolin Soccer, and then a Netflix animation series called Arc, and that's with like Russell Crowe, Vin Diesel, Michelle Yeoh, a whole bunch of people. It's been a lot of fun doing the VO, and then recently the Mortal Kombat animation. So I'm playing Kuai Liang, who's Sub-Zero, which is great because in the MK11 game, which was huge, I played Scorpion. So that's my voiceover thing. The directing thing, we were supposed to go with the Universal with 47 Ronin, but you know, because of COVID, it got pushed back to next year. And then Eight Dragons after that is another kind of like a Asian Kingsman type film. But yeah, I think I'm going to be going to Canada in February just for a quick little thing on a new show called Kung Fu with one of my castmates from Mulan. He plays the father in Mulan. He's also the father in Kung Fu. So that's going to be fun. But I'm really excited about this indie I did that last year that I gained like 68 pounds for. So
yeah, I'm looking at you. You're looking big.
Yeah,
you're looking
robust. I got to drop the weight, man. I realized, Mike, next time I'm doing a fat suit because this adding the weight at our age, getting older, man, it just doesn't go away as
fast. But you look muscular. You look like you've been working out.
Nah, it's also being out of shape, man. I mean, actually, I dropped a lot of weight at one point because I unfortunately got COVID when we were on the press junket for Mulan in England. So looked like a Holocaust victim at one point now. And then just resting and doing stuff like not working out, just been eating again. But now I got to get back onto that workout train. But
I mean, you train regularly, don't you? Yeah. By your standard, you might be out of shape, but by most people, you're definitely in shape.
Yeah, I normally train a lot. Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important, man, you know, especially as we are growing up in age and, you know, just health-wise, yeah.
So here's an interesting question, and I'm dying to find this about, let's say you meet, I'm sure you do all the time, but a 20-something in your situation, what kind of advice would you give them? It's different than you going back and telling yourself advice, but somebody's coming up, they're on the same route as you. What were some things that you would tell them to set them off in the right direction?
That's another great question because that's happened a lot. I think the people, there was a time, now it's more popular that you do both. But back in the days, if you did stunts, old-time stunt guys would give you crap if they found out you were trying to act. And if you were acting and you tried to do stunts, it's kind of the same kind of thing. So it was, so what I used to tell kids back then, younger guys, like, just shut up. When you do stunts, keep your fucking stunt cap on. Don't talk about acting. When you're acting, don't talk about the stunt work. Just keep them separate. Work hard on both. But that's a different era. So now it's kind of trendy to be good in both. Now they're going to, people are actually looking for that, looking for people doing that. But now it's about, I think in this day of Instagram and TikTok and everything, it's like I would tell them, I'm not good with this social media stuff, but if you're going to do that, great. But don't forget the art. Don't forget why. It's not just about being, for me, about being famous. It's about being the best as you can be as an actor or as a director, as a producer, as a writer, you know, as a martial artist. You got to keep training. You got to keep working on the craft, because we all know, like, we stop playing basketball, we stop fucking getting in the ring for a month or two. You get a little, it's a little, you know, you get some skills dropped, you know, so you got to keep it up. We got to keep our tools sharp. So not everyone just stays incredible without doing shit. You know, but for people that just want to get famous, that just want to pose to their fame and do all that, they're not going to put the work in. And that's something where we, as people, like, I've helped out a lot of younger people in the 30 years. I think what I would tell my younger guy, the younger guys, like, be choosier of who you help, because you may be doing something that is from your heart, but that person may just be thinking all about him or herself. He will never help out other people. So be choosy who you help and put that time in.
You know, I think that's a really fitting place to close. And I'll tell you why. Because when you and I started first talking, became acquaintances and talking, I remember we talk about movies and stuff. And the most important thing for you, like I said before, was always about the craft, was always about the realism, was always about the technique. It was never about, like, any of the flash part of it. It was about the process. And that's what you're saying now. And that was back in the 90s when you and I were conversing about these things, you know, whenever we did talk, you know. And I think that
those are great talks, man.
I'm glad to see that still
there.
I'm
glad you remember them. Those are great talks. Yeah.
I forgot the independent films. Sick memory. We were sitting in Gold's Gym in North Hollywood, and you're like, Mike, have you seen this film? And that, do you remember the films you were telling me about?
I remember. I was always talking movies and shows. I could talk everybody's ears off about that shit. Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. And I'm glad to see that hasn't changed, man. And I really enjoy, you just keep on going, man. And do you want to refer anybody anywhere? You know, anything else that you got going on? You got to check out Ron.
You got to check out the independent film I was talking about that I shot in Seattle. Is called The Paper Tigers. Shot for $800,000-$900,000, but we got into Busan, all these festivals. Now we just got theatrical release with Wellgo USA. It's a martial arts comedy that's never come out like before, like a film like this. It's a really heartfelt.
So I saw the trailer to it. You play like an old guy. You got like a toupee or like a hairpiece on there.
Gained 67 pounds because the director, because I was already gaining weight. So I had a belly, right? And I just went to New York and I got made fun of from my friends. And you're like, I'm trying to gain weight for this movie. But I was doing Wu-Tang, an American Saga. So I was playing this Shaolin Abbot, but it worked for the role, you know? So
it's kind of a comedic role though, right?
Yeah. So basically, RZA, and, it's RZA and Alex C show. And Alex C called me and said, yo, man, what you doing like next week, dude? We've been auditioning, like, just no guys can come in and do the urban lingo like you can. I'm like, well, what is it? What's the situation? Sent me the stuff. Oh man, total like Shaw Brothers kung fu flick, but instead everyone's speaking ghetto fabulous English, right? So I improv some stuff, sent it back. They're like, yeah, this is exactly, boom, boom. Did that show. It was so much fun. So I gained this weight. I was eating like crazy. Came back here. Director had, we had like a week rehearsal, about a week and a half before we had to fly up to Seattle. So we, all the actors met for the first time, but the director just said, yo, you're not fat enough. I'm like, bro, I'm like 35 pounds overweight, dude. Like, look at this belly. Like, yeah, but your shoulders, your arms, like, I'm like, you got to get fatter, dude, because the lead guy now is so skinny. And then this guy's, but I'm like, all right, I'm going to do my best. So I just ate every night at 3 a.m. Like, even when I was in Seattle, I would, like, put extra salt and soy sauce on fucking everything and bloat. So yeah, I'm huge. And, yeah, I'm wearing a wig. I asked to wear a wig. So
that's Paper Tiger. Where can you get on Netflix?
No, not right now. It's going to be theatrically released next year first, and then it'll probably be on Netflix or something like that, some streaming avenue. I think it's going to be Netflix, yeah.
Paper Tiger.
The Paper Tiger.
And you look funny. You could tell the guy, you got the chops too, because, you know, I was like, okay, you know.
Actually, you got to watch it, Mike, because I think you're going to love it. You're going to crack up on a lot of shit. Yeah.
Paper Tiger. All right. You got it. Matt, Ron, thank you so much. I love you, man. I'm so glad you, you know, were on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, bro.
That was my good old buddy, Ron Yuan. He's putting in the reps. He's making it happen. He's a great actor, putting out great work. Looking forward to seeing what he does next. All right. If you want to find out more about our show, go to longshotleaders.com. If you want to be a part of something special and get your daily dose of inspiration, perspiration, exasperation, knowledge, and creativity, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our podcast. And if you like what we do, share our show with your family and your friends and put some positivity out there in the world. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again on the next episode, I bid you adieu. Where did I get French from?